Ramayana, Balakanda, Part 8. When morning arrived, Ram expressed his eagerness to cross the Ganga and continue their journey. The caravan was soon made ready to depart. After reaching the far bank of the Ganga, the caravan traveled on and eventually came to the city of Vishala. And when Lord Ram requested Vishvamitra to speak about the dynasty of kings that ruled that city, the Rishi narrated the following history. The demigods and demons are by nature inimical toward one another. Once, following the advice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods executed a truce with the demons for the purpose of churning nectar from the sea. This was done with the understanding that when the nectar was churned, both sides would share it equally. Thus both the demons and the demigods, desiring to become immortal, started for the ocean of milk, taking with them Mandara Mountain and Vasuki. By the expert arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons held the snake near its mouth, and the demigods held its tail. Vasuki, with his thousands of eyes and mouths, breathed smoke and blazing fire, which severely wounded the demons. Thus the demons, who appeared like trees being burned by a forest fire, gradually became powerless. Because the demigods were also affected by the blazing breath of Vasuki, their bodily luster diminished, and their garments, garlands, weapons, and faces were blackened by smoke. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, clouds appeared on the sea, pouring torrents of rain, and strong breezes carried particles of water from the sea waves, thus giving relief to the demigods. And because of the great weight of Mount Mandara, the demigods and demons became fatigued, and some were even dying. Since the mountain was very heavy and was not held by any support, it sank into the ocean. In this way, the prowess of both demons and demigods was vanquished. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, then appeared on the back of his carrier, Garuda. The Lord appeared like a blackish cloud. Wearing a garland of flowers, he was dressed with yellow garments and earrings that shone on his ears like lightning. His eyes were pinkish, and his hair was spread over his shoulders. By his mercy, he brought the demigods and demons back to life. The Lord then lifted the mountain with one hand, placing it on the back of Garuda. Then the Lord sat on the mountain, and Garuda carried him to the spot of the churning, placing the mountain in the middle of the sea. Lord Vishnu then asked Garuda to leave that place, because as long as Garuda was present, Vasuki could not come there. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, then appearing in his incarnation as Kurma Avatar, a gigantic tortoise, supported the mountain upon his back as he lay at the bottom of the ocean. Lord Vishnu, using his strong, glorious arms, which award fearlessness throughout the universe, took hold of Vasuki like a rope and began churning the ocean, using Mandara Mountain as a churning rod. Engaged in this way, Lord Vishnu appeared like the beautifully situated mountain named Indranila. Mandara Mountain moved back and forth, scratching the back of Lord Tortoise, who, while partially sleeping, was experiencing an itching sensation. Lord Vishnu then further expanded himself in a gigantic form, thus supporting the top of Mount Mandara with one hand, keeping it steady. And as the churning resumed with great force,
Fish, sharks, tortoises, and snakes all became agitated. The entire ocean became turbulent, and even the large aquatic animals like the whales, water elephants, crocodiles, and tamingala fish came to the surface. While the ocean was being churned in this way, it first produced a huge amount of dangerous poison known as halahala. Seeing no one else to save them, the demigods approached Lord Shiva, offering him prayers. Lord Shiva is called Ashutosha because he is very pleased if one becomes his devotee. Therefore, he readily agreed to drink all the poison generated by the churning. Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, was not at all disturbed when her husband agreed to drink the poison, for she knew well of Lord Shiva's prowess. Indeed, she was pleased with this arrangement. Lord Shiva then gathered the devastating poison, which had spread everywhere. He took it in his hand and drank it, which made his neck become bluish. However, a small quantity of the poison spilled out from his hands to the ground. And it is because of this poison that there are poisonous snakes, scorpions, toxic plants, and other poisonous things in the world. Thereafter, in the course of churning the milk ocean, 600 million apsaras were produced. And because neither the demigods nor demons accepted them, they became prostitutes. Finally, after many years, Lord Vishnu, in the form of Dhanvantari, the inaugurator of the medical science, appeared from the ocean of milk, holding a water pot filled with nectar in one hand and a staff in the other. A great fight then ensued between demigods and demons over the nectar. And when both sides neared destruction, the demons took possession of the nectar. Lord Vishnu then assumed the form of Mohini Murti. When this extraordinarily beautiful form of the Lord as a young woman appeared before them, the demons immediately became captivated by her. Because the demons at that time were fighting among themselves as to who should possess the nectar, they selected this beautiful woman to settle their quarrel. Taking advantage of their weakness, Mohini Murti enticed the demons to promise that whatever decision she gave, they would agree to it. So when the demons made this promise, Mohini Murti had the demigods and demons sit in different lines so that she could distribute the nectar. Mohini Murti approached the demons and spoke graciously to them. The demons thought themselves most fortunate to talk with her. Since the demigods were seated at a distant place, the demons thought the demigods would get only a small portion of the nectar. Indeed, the demons concluded that because Mohini Murti appeared so pleased with them, she would give the demons all the nectar. Enchanted by the exquisite transcendental beauty of Mohini Murti, the demons agreed to hand over the nectar to her, who then artfully delivered it to the demigods. The demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mohini Murti that although the demigods were served first, the demons were pacified merely by her sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, "Oh, those demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar. So let them have it first. Since you are not like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes and are therefore pleased with me. So it is better that you wait until after the demigods are finished drinking." The Lord intended, however, to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. She knew that the demons were quite unfit to drink nectar. But when the demons saw that Mohini Murti was cheating them, still they remained silent. Nevertheless, one demon named Rahu dressed himself like a demigod and then sat down in their line, sitting beside the sun and moon. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead understood how Rahu was cheating, Mohini Murti immediately cut off the demon's head. Rahu, however, had already tasted the nectar, and therefore, although his head was severed, he remained alive, and the body died. After the demigods had finished drinking nectar, Mohini Murti assumed her own form and quickly carried off the nectar by an act of deception. When the demons opposed her, Mohini Murti easily vanquished them, thus enabling Indra to become the undisputed ruler of the three worlds. Upon seeing the defeat of her sons, Diti became very unhappy, and thus began performing austerities with the aim of obtaining a son capable of killing Indra in revenge. But knowing that Diti was intent upon performing austerities for 1,000 years in order to attain his destruction, Indra came to her and began rendering menial service with great care and attention. When only 10 years of her vow remained, Diti, being pleased with Indra, assured him that she would pacify her son once he was born, so that Indra could continue ruling over the three worlds without fear. Indra, however, remained suspicious. Sometime later, Diti became very tired and carelessly laid down, placing her head where her feet normally would rest. In this way, Diti neglectfully allowed her hair to become contaminated. Seizing the advantage of this fault, Indra utilized his mystic power to enter her womb. Indra then cut Diti's embryo into 7 parts. When the fetus cried out in a shrill voice, Indra again cut each part into 7, making a total of 49 pieces. Diti, however, could understand what was happening, and so she begged Indra to stop killing her child. Having been discovered, the repentant Indra came out from her womb and begged forgiveness from his stepmother. Thus, Diti requested that her 49 children be allowed to become wind gods. Indra agreed, and thus he and Diti were reconciled, while the 49 children became recognized as the demigods known as the Maruts. Vishvamitra then concluded, "This city, Vishal, is situated at the place where Diti formerly performed her austerities. Later, the son of Ikshvaku, named Vishal, built this city, and the present king in his dynasty is Sumati." Maharaj Sumati then came out of the city to receive and worship Vishvamitra. At his invitation, the party rested there for the night. The next morning, the caravan again proceeded on its journey toward the kingdom of Videha. Upon reaching the outskirts of Mithila, the capital city of Maharaj Janaka, Lord Ram saw an old desolate hermitage. After Ram inquired about it from Vishvamitra, the Rishi explained, "This ashram formerly belonged to Gautama Rishi, who practiced austerities here along with his wife, Ahalya. Once upon a time, knowing that Gautama was away from his ashram, King Indra assumed a form which closely resembled the rishis. He went to the ashram in that disguise and approached Gautama's wife. "Oh, my dear beautiful one, I now desire union with you immediately, so please do not disappoint me." Although Ahalya recognized that it was Indra disguised as her husband, she did not refuse him, for she too eagerly desired Indra's embraces. Thus the union took place, and after their lusty urges had been gratified, Ahalya begged, "O Indra, please protect us from the wrath of my husband Gautama." Indra assured Ahalya that he would depart immediately, unnoticed by anyone. However, while Indra was sneaking away from Gautama's ashram, the rishi suddenly returned. When Gautama saw Indra disguised as himself, with his head hanging down in shame, Gautama could well understand the nature of Indra's misconduct. And thus, with great anger, Gautama cursed Indra. "Oh, you lusty fool! May your testicles immediately fall off as punishment for your abominable actions." No sooner had the curse been pronounced when Indra's testicles fell from his body, dropping to the ground. Then, after entering his ashram, Gautama cursed his wife. "Oh, you wretched woman! From now on you shall be incapable of eating or drinking, and you will have to lie down on a bed of ashes." Ahalya was thus turned into a pillar of stone. Gautama then said, "Only when Lord Ram visits this spot in the distant future will you be absolved of your sin, freed from all lusty desires, and reunited with me as your husband." Saying this, Gautama departed for the Himalayas. Meanwhile, Indra informed the demigods, "I have successfully thwarted Gautama Rishi's attempt to attain my position as King of Heaven by making him angry. However, in the process, I have lost my testicles. Now, somehow or other, please arrange for my manhood to be restored." Responding to Indra's plea, the demigods arranged for the Pittas to castrate a ram and grafted its testicles onto Indra's body. After narrating this story, Vishvamitra invited Lord Ram to enter the ashram of Gautama. And as soon as Ram entered the hermitage, Ahalya regained her original form, dazzling with ascetic splendor. Indeed, upon Ahalya's liberation, there was a sudden shower of celestial flowers with drums beating in the heavens. Ram and Lakshman respectfully touched the feet of Ahalya, and she reciprocally welcomed the two brothers and Vishvamitra. Gautama Rishi was then reunited with his wife and worshipped Lord Ram and Lakshmana with great reverence.